At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
All right, Leslie, welcome back to the Wire to Wire podcast.
Thanks so much, Yusuf, for having me.
Yeah, of course. You know, this marks your second appearance on the show, right? But for those of you who may be new tuning in for the first time, whatever the case may be, if you want to just introduce yourself to those people.
Sure. So my name is Leslie Hensel. I'm co-founder of Riverbend Consulting. I've been a seller on Amazon since 2010, and Riverbend is now my day job, where I help people who are sellers on Amazon and some other e-commerce platforms as well, who are having some challenges. It can be a difficult ecosystem, but I still sell on my own account in a small way as a small family business.
Okay, perfect. So, I mean, you're the perfect person then to kind of break down the topic or the topics that we'll be getting into today. But in the last episode that we did together when I had you on, you know, we were discussing your business, Riverbend Consulting, and you were kind of talking on like what some of those issues were that sellers came across and, you know, what they can do to avoid having those issues and what role you play in solving them. But, you know, today I kind of want to have you on as more so of a special guest, right? And you'll be sharing some of the, you know, co-hosting duties with me. But what I really want us to get into is, you know, discussing, you know, the viability of Amazon as a business, right? And kind of break down some tips on how sellers can be successful. And, you know, you can share many of the stories, good and bad, from your experience.
Hey, that sounds great. And, you know, a lot of people ask all the time, can you still make money selling on Amazon? I think some people think it has peaked or it's past its prime, forgive the pun, or that it's still ripe for the picking. So it's always a good discussion to have.
Yeah, definitely. So we can actually kind of, I'm glad you brought that part up, so we can kind of kick it off from there, right? So obviously people, especially in this economy, you know, they're looking to make more of an income and have some extra money coming in, right? So you did mention this, and there are some narratives and stories that, you know, businesses that are selling on Amazon are not doing too well. There's been some stories of some businesses shutting down altogether. But if you kind of want to speak to that and, you know, get into that narrative and whether or not it's actually still the case.
So there are absolutely some well-known businesses that are either restructuring or have shut down that sell on Amazon. The ones that have gotten the headlines are the aggregators. So these were really big companies that went out and raised a whole lot of money and then took on an equal amount of debt. And I'm telling y'all this for a reason, I promise. And then they bought up small Amazon brands that people like you and me developed on the platform. And so they thought, we're going to bring in all these small Amazon brands, and then we're going to have all these efficiencies, and it's going to be awesome. And the reason these stories got in the news is because these guys took on huge amounts of equity and then equal amounts of debt. So here's your hint. When they started doing this, interest rates were still down at 2% and 3%, which they're not anymore. So then the interest rates went up, and they have, you know, $50 million, $100 million, $200 million of debt they had to service. And so a lot of them could not handle the debt service on top of their regular operating expenses. And then they just didn't have the kind of efficiencies they thought they were going to have. So they overpaid for brands. So that's what you see in the news. But there are a whole lot of mom and pop sellers, mid-sized businesses, established brands that Amazon is one of their channels, and people like me who have small family businesses who are still doing fine on Amazon. Some of them had their best year ever last year and their best fourth quarter ever. Some in certain categories, sales have slowed down some, but they're still operating just fine. So don't let the tremendous failures of some of these really big businesses in the news make you think that there still aren't a lot of people making money on Amazon.
Yeah, and I do. One part that I do find interesting is that I find that it's very common that the exceptions to the rule kind of dominate the storylines. So they'll look at the big names that you mentioned that are coming up short in their ventures, and then they'll take that as the narrative for the entire industry, but they're not looking at the, like you mentioned, the small mom and pop and the mid-sized businesses that are actually doing well.
Exactly. And, I think that Amazon businesses really are having the same challenges everyone else is having. So it's not like it's unique. There are problems with supply chain. There are problems where private label sellers are having to pay more to get their containers delivered than they did 2 years ago. There's inflationary pressure. There are certain categories where people aren't being as free with their money. Things that are optional goods, they're not spending as much on. Like in any, potentially recessionary period, people spend on the necessities and not on the luxuries. So yes, there are sellers struggling with those market forces, but they're really the same market forces affecting the entire market, brick and mortar, everyone in their everyday life. It's not like it's special just to Amazon.
Yeah, so I mean, if people can't tell by now, you're clearly knowledgeable on Amazon. And you did talk about that you're also a mid-sized seller yourself, right? So if you kind of want to discuss a little bit, your experience of selling on Amazon, but then also too how that experience has actually helped you in the work that you do now, with Riverbend Consulting.
So I am a classic mommypreneur story that everyone has heard over the years on Amazon. There are a lot of us out there that the reason we started selling is because of some challenge with our kids. So way back in 2010, my older kid was diagnosed with autism and a bunch of learning disabilities, and he was not doing well in school. And no matter what we tried, so we decided to homeschool him and do a whole lot of very expensive therapy. And I, at the time, was working as a consultant, as a business consultant, and I had to quit doing that, obviously, if I was going to homeschool this kid and do all this therapy. So we had to find a way we could supplement our income as a family because therapy isn't cheap. And we had a goal of putting him in special needs school one day. So I heard about selling on Amazon, and I would go source inventory nights and weekends when my husband was home with the kids. And as a family, we would ship our inventory, all of our goods to Amazon FBA on the weekends. Even at 2 years old, my younger kid Jackson, who's now 16, he could put stickers on goods when he was two. And they, for years, have helped me box and ship all of my inventory and managed all of our inventory on a week-to-week basis. So I am all about the side hustle. I've grown that into a business that is pretty automated. I have wholesalers I get product from. I have some people that are brands that I resell their goods. I am an exclusive seller of their goods. So, and then I have a bunch of VAs who work in my account as well. And my kids still work in the business, and my husband still helps out. But now as a consultant with Riverbend. I've had Riverbend for 6.5 years. I have worked with the largest seller on Amazon, all the way down to mom and pops and people like me who started out as I want to supplement my retirement income, or I want to pay for my kids' college, or I want to buy a new car, those kinds of goals. And some of those sellers that started with those little goals, those side hustle goals, now have brands that sell $20 million a year on Amazon.
Yeah, and you see that is a definition of the American dream, right? But there is, from what you're describing, I think there is great opportunity there. And I know people are going to hear these numbers, 20 million, they're going to get very excited, but one step at a time. So kind of what I want us to get into now is, I guess, breaking down like what are the actual steps, for people to become a successful seller, right? But before we get into that, I just want you to clarify one thing if you could, because we see it on TikTok and Instagram. There's a lot of conversation around, drop shipping, right? So if you can, for us to have a practical, realistic conversation about how people will be successful, if you can clarify and discuss, what is Amazon's stance on drop shipping and what is their standard within the terms and conditions.
Okay, so we're gonna have to nerd out for a second because this is like really specific, but it's a great question. And it's a great question because if you go out and search YouTube or Google, how can I sell on Amazon? There are all these courses that come up and all these, I'm going to build your store for you. And it's passive income and it's automated. So a lot of times, when someone is selling you drop shipping, they will call it an automated store. So the problem is all of that is against Amazon's terms of service. And at this point, if Amazon catches you doing the drop shipping that they don't like, they will not only shut you down, they will hold any funds that are in your account. So you get paid out every 2 weeks from Amazon off of the money that you've earned minus their fees. And so if you've got $50,000 sitting there in your account for product you've sold, and by the way, that you've paid for, right? And that you've sold it and people have it and Amazon catches you and shuts you down, that 50 grand is gone forever. And if you happen to have other goods you're selling the right way and they're sitting in the FBA warehouse, those are gone forever too. They're not giving them back. So what is this bad drop shipping? There's two kinds of drop shipping. The okay kind of drop shipping is usually guys who sell automotive parts and computer parts as examples. They're things with a whole lot of SKUs. So if you think about your car and you need to replace a knob in your car on the radio, there's how many models of how many brands of car, right? So no one stocks all of those. So you use a drop shipper. That is like an authorized distributor of automotive parts. And you list their catalog on Amazon, and then they fulfill the orders for you. And when they fulfill them by shipping them to your customer, they have your store name on the return address that the customer receives. So they believe they're actually receiving that drop ship good from you. That is a formal wholesale drop shipping relationship, and hence they're really hard to get. These are not easy relationships to get. And those are okay because you're the seller of record. And on any invoice in the packaging and on that return label, it says Leslie's store. So all of the courses that you see out there on YouTube, that's not what they're selling you. What they are selling you is a bunch of VAs, virtual assistants, usually sitting somewhere overseas, who are combing through catalogs online of Home Depot and Target and Walmart and Sam's Club. And they are looking for items that are selling on those storefronts for cheaper than they're selling on Amazon.com. So then what they do is they fill up your storefront with listings for those items, and you never actually have the items in stock. So then when Yusuf buys the chainsaw from Home Depot that I've listed on Amazon from me, then one of those VAs goes and buys it from Home Depot online and ships it direct to Yusuf. So I never owned the product. So I'm not the seller of record. And when Yusuf gets the box, he sees it's from Home Depot and he's confused because he bought it from Amazon. Why on earth did it come in a Home Depot box? And then he opens up the invoice and sees that it costs 15 bucks less. than what he paid. So that makes Amazon really mad. It makes them look bad. It's very confusing. It's a bad experience for the customer. They don't know where to return it to. If there's a quality issue, they don't know where to complain. So that is why they don't allow it. And all of these automated systems out there that sound so good because you don't have to do any work, all of them will get you busted.
Yeah, perfect. And I'm really glad that you cleared that up because, like I was mentioning earlier, I want to set, realistic goals, right? It's not to say that someone can't make money, but it's a process. And, I'm not interested in like shortcuts, get rich quick schemes, that kind of stuff. So for anyone listening, I just want to get that clarified for them and give them tangible steps, that if they're willing to do the work and apply some principles that hopefully they learn from this episode, then they can find success in their journey, without with minimal risk, right? So, let's get
Yeah.
into the steps. So, what is the first step that someone can take, in order to become a successful Amazon seller?
So I'm going to start out by being very boring. And the difference between Amazon now and Amazon 10 years ago is you really have to set up your business as a legitimate, boring, old school business. So, no matter how you're sourcing the inventory, what you're doing, you need to have a business license if it's required in your jurisdiction. You need a business bank account. You need an LLC. You need to set up books so that you know your numbers and know if you're making money. So, you need to get Quicken or something similar to it where you put your expenses and you put your revenue. And you need a system for filing all your invoices and all your other official documents from suppliers. That is really boring stuff, but I tell you, if you don't do that up front, then next year in 2025, it's going to be April 15th, and you're going to be trying to recreate what you did in 2024, and it's going to be ugly and hard because you got to file your taxes, and you don't want to be there. Also, if you don't set up your books and actually enter your expenses as the year goes on, you could be working for free and not know it. Or paying to work, even worse, and not know it because you don't know what your revenue and expenses are. So set yourself up as a legit business from day one with that LLC. None of this is expensive to do, and it's going to make life better as you move forward.
Yeah, and I think it's good that you mentioned that part. I mean, I know that, like you mentioned, it is kind of boring, but it is a necessity, right? Because it's one of those things you only have to do once. Like you get your business license one time. Certain jurisdictions, you might have to renew it ever so often, but that's beside the point. Bank accounts, you only apply for once. Accounting, I mean, that's an annual or quarterly thing, depending on the setup of the company, but that's just the cost of doing business. There's no way around that. So once a person, sets up the business legitimately, then what does their next step look like?
So the real focus for someone who wants to sell on Amazon is deciding what they want to sell and how they're going to find it. And that is really the biggest decision you're going to make, but it impacts everything that you do in the future with the business as well, because it impacts how you fulfill the products, all the other decisions you have to make. So a lot of people still today start off their business with something that is kind of easy. It does have a little risk, which is retail arbitrage and online arbitrage. Most people, I think, who are interested in entrepreneurship and hustles have seen some kind of story in the news in the past. They know these people exist who at Christmas, they go down to the Walmart and they buy the hot gaming system or the Tickle Me Elmo of that year or whatever the hot toy is, right? And they put it on Amazon and they flip it and they ship it out really fast. That is arbitrage. It's finding goods that are less expensive wherever you get them than they are online. There are a lot of people who run long-term businesses with retail arbitrage on Amazon. It is not the most sustainable way to run a business because you have to always be finding that new hot thing. You will find what some people call replenishables. Replenishables are very attractive. It's something that You figure out every month I sell 50 of these. So every month I go to Walmart and I buy 50 of these and they're gonna sell and I ship them in and it's awesome. But someone else eventually finds it too, and then it's competitive and difficult. So over time, you want to move to something else with less competition. But as a way to get started, or as a side hustle, if all you want is that 2,000 bucks a month net, that you want that extra cash and you just want to keep it a side hustle, retail arbitrage is still awesome. And you can go, especially if you've got outlet malls near you that have true outlet stores, not the outlet stores that are pretend outlet stores. You know what I'm talking about, Yusuf?
I know
Like
what you mean.
there's outlet malls that have stores that everything actually costs the same thing, or it's lower quality, one of the two for the brand. But then there's the real ones with the deals. Those are great places to source product. So it's still a great way to get started and to get some cash moving so that you can develop other ways of sourcing products that are more expensive.
Yeah, and I just kind of had a thought to what you're saying. Like, even sometimes, like those warehouse sales that they have. Like, I find sometimes, like, big brands, they'll have like warehouse sales, like, particularly, like, like clone companies. I find that they'll do like these sales, like, for a limited period of time, where they'll take certain like cologne and product lineups and they'll sell it at a very discounted price. So maybe
Yes.
that could even be an option for people as well, in addition to what you're saying with the outlet stores and outlet malls.
You know what's fantastic about both of these options too is you're actually buying directly from the brand. So one of the challenges with retail arbitrage is you have to prove that the product is really the product. It's not counterfeit, inauthentic, because sometimes buyers complain. So if you go to a discount store, like a true discount store, sometimes your invoice or your receipt, it'll just say like grocery instead of actually saying the name of the product or having the UPC. That's not proof of anything. So that's not good for Amazon. But like if you go to Walmart, for example, most people have been to a Walmart, they've seen the receipt. It actually has the full UPC number on the receipt. So you can prove what that is. Well, when you go to an outlet mall, you're actually buying from Chaps or whoever, whatever that store is. That's who you're buying from, and it says it on the invoice. So you're buying from the brand almost like you're a direct buyer, right, of wholesale on the brand. And those warehouse deals you're talking about, same thing. Another great thing, if you have it in your area, sometimes a manufacturer will change packaging of a product. And they will liquidate out the old packaging, and you're buying directly from the brand. It's awesome to do. And they'll have those same big warehouse deals where they're just getting rid of it. But when your invoice comes, it has the name of that brand, which makes it really legit and fantastic sourcing.
Yeah, and kind of like too, like recently, sometime last year, because I'm based in Toronto, so they had like Nordstrom was exiting the Canadian market, so they were clearing out everything, right? So sometimes I guess it's keeping an eye open to those kinds of opportunities and seeing where you might find something, right? Because one good thing that you're mentioning about the retail arbitrage is that you're not really limited to one product type. You can sell a multitude of products that you might be able to find at a retailer. So
Yeah,
it's.
that's a great point. And ask yourself as you're sourcing, if I were Amazon and I got this invoice or receipt from Yusuf, and let me tell you why I'm mentioning this. Sometimes if you get a product complaint, Amazon will on Seller Central, which is where you manage your account, they'll send you a message and say, we need invoices for this product. And you have to scan them or get a PDF and send it to them. To prove to them that you're sourcing legitimate products, they have to keep counterfeits off the platform. So ask yourself when you see these opportunities. So if I have an invoice from Nordstrom, is Amazon going to accept that? Well, yeah, they're going to accept that. They're going to accept that, 99% of the time. They're going to accept Target. They're going to accept places that are really big, obviously legitimate, and that have direct relationships with brands. So that they know that the stuff is good. So that's kind of the question you have to ask yourself, as opposed to, are they going to believe this TJ Maxx receipt? Well, no, because look at it and it just says shoes. And that could be anything. So I can't prove that it's the expensive brand of shoe because it just says shoes. Yeah. Yeah, but I love that idea. Like Nordstrom, that would have been an amazing place to go source products. And like you said, you could get housewares, you get clothing, you could get beauty, all the things.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, so this is great information. So now that they've kind of decided on what they want to sell and how they're going to be able to find it, because you and I, we just listed a bunch of options for people to look into, right? Usually, what would be the next step after that? Like, what would they do next?
So most sellers choose Amazon FBA for fulfilling their items. So you have two choices. You can ship items out as they sell. You can ship them directly from your location to your customer. So you're picking, packing, shipping, paying for the postage for those items, or you can ship them by FBA, which is fulfilled by Amazon. So if you are next time you're out on Amazon.com and you're looking at an item, you're going to see that for any item, it has two things under the price over in that right-hand side column where the pricing is. It says ships from and sold by. And sometimes it'll say Amazon.com for both of those. So Amazon owns the item. Other times it'll say sold by Leslie, shipped from Amazon. So that means I have shipped all of my merchandise to the Amazon warehouse and they pick, pack, and ship the order for me. So, warning, the fees are high. However, they get such a good deal on postage, on their UPS deal, on all of their fulfillment methods. They can beat any rate that I can get with UPS or FedEx or the post office or anywhere else. And then you have to take into account storage fees. I can store a whole lot more FBA than I can if I have a local storage unit or something I pay for. It's actually reasonably priced. There are a lot of people who will tell you it is not. If you actually sit down and run the numbers, for most small sellers, it totally makes sense to ship to FBA. And also, they can pick and pack orders anytime of day. So, if you're doing this as a side hustle or as a family business, do you really want to be beholden to having to ship orders every single day and make sure they get to the post office and actually get scanned by a postal employee with an origin scan? No, you probably don't. So, the fees, depending on the category you're selling, unless the item, okay, wait, caveat, step back. Sorry, Leslie, caveat. If you sell things that are huge and heavy, you don't want to use FBA because things that are huge and heavy are really expensive. But for things that are regular sized and small sized, it makes sense. So you can have a packing party, and on the weekend or one night, you get the family together and you create a shipping plan on Seller Central and you ship everything off to the Amazon warehouses. And about anywhere from 3 days to 2 weeks later, depending on how far away it is and how good the warehouse is. All of your items come online and they're available for sale. So for someone like me, who this is truly a like Riverbend's my full-time job, Amazon is my side business that pays for my kids' tuition and our family vacations. So for someone like me, it totally makes sense because I don't want to pay for someone to come pick and pack orders, and I don't want to end my day that way.
Yeah, it makes sense. And it's good that you made those distinctions, because as you're speaking, I wonder what's the cost. I wonder if it's more costly to get it fulfilled by Amazon, and then you clarified that. And this is good, because even though I'm talking to you, I feel like I'm getting, two Leslies. I'm getting the seller as well as the consultant. So I kind of want you to put on your consultant hat for a moment, right? So within the steps that you just listed so far, as someone who helps people, like being able to restore their account or get their, resolve whatever issues they might be having with Amazon, where do you usually see the trouble, and which one of these steps do you usually see the trouble kick in for sellers that requires you to kind of intervene and help?
New Jersey's got a lot of historic wows, from Victorian beach towns to Revolutionary War battlegrounds. Explore wow after wow at more than 463 historic landmarks. in museums, lighthouses, and over 58 state and national parks. It's one wow after another after another. You get it. Find your wow at visitnj.org/history. New Jersey, little state, lot of wow.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So the most problems that we see that sellers actually can't fix themselves, that they have to hire a professional to get help, it does come down to where they're sourcing their inventory and whether Amazon likes that source. And that's why even though retail arbitrage is a great way to have a low volume side hustle or to get started, it isn't necessarily the best place to stay long term. There are other ways to source inventory that make more sense because you can prove the legitimacy of your goods more easily. So I'll give you an example. If you have a great relationship with a wholesaler or a distributor of goods, and you got to go out there and search for them, you can find them online. You have to ask a lot of questions. You have to make sure that they allow online resale of their goods because some places don't, some brands don't like it. They'll file complaints against you for intellectual property, even though you didn't do anything wrong. So there's still risk and you have to be careful, but there's some great distributors and wholesalers out there where you can, just like that replenishables idea from earlier, you can find certain products that you will sell 50 units a month of this one. And so every month you're just placing that order with that wholesaler for 50 units and creating a great listing and selling it. My other favorite way, which sounds crazy, everyone that I've talked to, when I give them this idea, they tell me it's crazy. And then the ones who go do it come back to me and say, that's the best thing I've ever heard. So here's my crazy idea, y'all. No matter where you live, there are business parks near you. There are small businesses in those business parks, and they sell products that they are not selling online. They don't want to learn to sell them online. That is not what they do. That is not their wheelhouse. So if you learn how to list products on Amazon and make them look pretty and create great photos and listings, you can go and pitch to these small businesses near you who would rather work with someone local, by the way. And you can say to them, hey, I want to be your exclusive seller on Amazon for these three products. Let's test them out. Most of them will even let you return all the goods if it doesn't work, because they just want to try it and see, hey, what if I could sell 100 units a month on Amazon? That'd be cool. And so they give you their best wholesale rate and you take the difference and you got to do the work to set it up. But then after that, it becomes like a semi-automatic process where you're just replenishing those goods every month. So there's no end of ways that you can find merchandise that everyone else on the planet isn't already selling. And over time, you gravitate to those things that are easier than the supermarket hustle of always looking for something new at a store.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good suggestion, because I imagine it's one of those scenarios where, you know, both sides will benefit, right? Because it's basically allowing you to be able to, you know, outsource product to have to sell. But then also too, you're helping businesses, you know, develop a digital footprint that they never really had before.
So. Yeah, it's an extra stream of revenue for everyone. And you're helping local businesses, which that feels good, right? It's your neighbors that can become your friends. And I had someone tell me once, I'd given them this idea, and instead of doing the drive around the business park, they went to their local chamber of commerce meetings and started meeting the local manufacturers who wanted help getting online, and they're like, hey, I'll do it for you. So there's all kinds of ways to do this where you're essentially becoming like a digital marketer more than a retailer. Even though you are the retailer of record for those goods, think of yourself more as I'm becoming a digital marketing professional and helping these existing brands and my friends and neighbors to make more money with their existing business. It's really cool.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I agree with you about the, you know, small businesses. You know, I do think that they drive a lot of, you know, they drive a lot like toward, they drive a lot towards economic growth. And I think provide a lot of, you know, local job opportunities and things of that nature. So, you know, I'm always for, you know, people supporting local and small businesses. So
make yourself a local hero. You can.
So just to kind of, you know, give people a bit of a summary here. So the first step you mentioned was, you know, set up the business legitimately, you know, getting an LLC or a license, bank accounts, getting their, you know, accounting books in order. Number two was, you know, deciding what you want to sell and how to find those products. And then the third thing you mentioned was, you know, shipping options and postage. So, I mean, those three, I think, you know, when you look at them in their totality, they seem very doable and actionable in terms of what people can do. Do you think there's any additional step to add?
So the ultimate for most small sellers, the nirvana of being an Amazon entrepreneur, is developing your own private label product. And doing the stuff we've already talked about, like trying out retail arbitrage, trying out wholesalers and distributors, is actually a great entree to private label. It teaches you a lot of the things that you need to know and think about before you make that jump into private label. So all private label means is you develop your own brand. You develop, you know, the Yusuf brand of body care or the Yusuf brand of snacks. And so it's your own packaging, it's your own trademarked brand, and then you work with a manufacturer who will do contract manufacturing for you, ship it direct to the Amazon warehouse usually. You never even touch the product except for quality checks prior. And they ship directly, and then you're trying to create this great built on Amazon brand and develop a following and people who will buy your product multiple times. So I know that sounds overwhelming. There are some really great groups out there with private label sellers that help each other, act like masterminds. There is a lot to learn. You have to figure out the shipping piece, you know, containers from overseas. Ah, there's so much to think about. But that's why it really does help to kind of be a baby seller as, you know, the wholesale or distributor or local business or retail arbitrage models, because if you, that way you can get down the internet marketing parts and you understand how the Amazon warehouses work and you understand how the consumer on Amazon works. I think it's really useful to do these other exercises before you jump into the private label products, because then the only thing you're learning at that point is how to make the best product.
Yeah, and I think and I think to kind of go off of what you're saying, there's a bit of there's a journey involved, right? So you're not suggesting people jump in right away. It's just get the experience, start small, work your way up. And then once you kind of understand it better, then you can, you know, consider this method as a way to do it, right? So
yes. And also as you sell wholesale products or resell for people, you're going to have product ideas. Because if I said right now to someone listening to us, give me five ideas for new products that are unique and will sell well, most of them would stammer and say, I don't know. There's so many things already done. But if you start, you know, you pick a category and you start selling lots of other people's products in that category, really quickly, you're going to start having ideas. You know, this would be better if I wouldn't get so many returns if. Why didn't they do this to the design? Why don't they improve the packaging that way? So just by getting your feet wet and being a reseller for a while, you're going to really quickly have all kinds of ideas for new products that you could go out there and develop.
Yeah, because it's, I think it's just kind of a natural evolution, because people, when they use a product long enough or they have enough exposure, they can just start to like pinpoint like what are the pain points, right? And then they just come up with an idea on how to solve those problems, right? And that's really how a lot of like new businesses are born. Like there was a time when if you look at smartphones, they had keyboards, they had styluses. And then, the guy behind me there looked at it and said, hey, well, what if everyone just used their thumb as their stylus? And then he created a whole new phone. And then that phone sparked different types of models of different types of phones, right? So I think what you're touching on is important because that's just a cycle of business.
Exactly. And if you don't have the experience, don't expect to jump in at the hardest assignment and knock it out of the park. There's so many points of failure. So if you can really just learn the basic, I'm an Amazon basic reseller kind of stuff first, then at a point you're going to feel the confidence that you can actually invest in a product. Also, you've got to have the capital to invest in the product. The first run of the product is going to cost you $5,000 or more. So if a lot of sellers, they actually use retail arbitrage and these other methods to save money. So they'll spend part of it for their goals and then they'll put aside some because they know I need $5,000 to develop that product and get my first shipment. And they use their Amazon earnings to build that up and launch that private label brand.
Yeah, exactly. And as you're saving, it'd be good for people to consider, to start the planning around that time as well, right? So that way when you are ready to do it, you're kind of going it into it with a plan. Or else you might end up like the companies that you mentioned earlier that were taking on all that debt, right? And then you'll just be repeating the cycle. So that is a good distinction. So I like that.
Well, and not running a business on a credit card is a beautiful thing. I mean, it creates so much. The goal of most entrepreneurs is to reduce their stress and anxiety. The first thing you talked about in our conversation was in this economy, people want some more cash flow, their expenses are up, they need some more money. That's why they're thinking about a side hustle. So the side hustle should bring you happiness. It should bring you income that you need to reduce your stress level because you can pay your bills. So I really like to warn people. I hate to use that word. I don't want to be the voice of doom, but you don't want to go run up $20,000-$30,000 in credit card debt in a business that's supposed to be creating financial freedom for you. So if you can bootstrap your way to having that money to then develop the product, and you bootstrap it by learning to sell on Amazon, retail arbitrage, whatever it is, that is like the stress-free way. So it's all a joy for you. It's nothing is dragging you down.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously we're living in this world. We see what's going on in terms of like, cost of living, inflation, and all of these things, right? And I think, with your story and your experience, dealing with your family, that's not as rare as we would think. That's a common experience that many, families and individuals are dealing with within their home, right? So it is good to have this kind of information out there and explain this stuff to them so they can see that there is other means, right? Because the natural inclination is like, okay, I need more money. Okay, let me just get another job, which is not a bad thing, right? There's nothing wrong with it, but it's just, you're trading in time for labor, and that might not bring money to the degree that you might need it based on life circumstances, right? So this is a good conversation that we're having because it presents that alternative for people.
Right. And a great message that I like to give to people is you're not alone and you can do this. You can make something like this happen for yourself or your family. And I've been in scary places with my family a couple of times where I didn't know what we were going to do money-wise because we had to make choices that were about quality of life for our kids and how to help them instead of revenue. But you still have to have the money, right? Especially if the quality of life stuff is expensive. Like, oh, my kid needs all this therapy. Or my younger child, a few years after that, when he was 8 years old, he had cancer. And so in that situation, we're like, oh, we have all these medical bills. But thank God we had a ton of inventory already at Amazon when he was diagnosed. I didn't touch my Amazon business for 6 months, and we got paid every 2 weeks as our stuff sold through. And that was such a blessing for our family. So I like to talk to families and to young people who have these goals of not feeling so anxious and stressed about money. So I can tell them, I promise you, I'm nothing special. I'm just an average person like everyone else who had the motivator to help my family. And I've made money on Amazon for years. If I can do it, you can do it too. And it can be a way to achieve your goals and make your life more joyful. More joy, less stress. That's the goal.
That is definitely the goal. And one thing that I did want to ask, right, is because we are talking about it in the context of a side hustle, but you did mention earlier about, people earning, 20 million or so. So I kind of want to get a little bit, I know you mentioned getting realistic, but I want to get a little bit aspirational, right? What is a key indicator that someone could look for, like when they want to make that transition from doing it as a side hustle to, potentially doing it full time? What is it that they can look for? What is the key thing that lets them know that, okay, it's time to make that transition?
So you need to be able to have enough revenue, no, not revenue, sorry, profits. You need to have enough profit in your Amazon business that you can replace your income and also have money left over to buy the next batch of inventory. So the biggest challenge for people who sell private label products, which if you're going to get rich, that's how you get like the rich part. Not that I'm making a great living. You can make a great living hustling other people's products on Amazon. You can make a few hundred thousand dollars a year hustling other people's products on Amazon. But if you want to get over to the whole rich multi-million dollar side, that's private label products being developed on Amazon. The tough part of private label is that if you ship it in and it sells out and it's going to be successful, you then have to manufacture more of it. So if the first order was 5 grand and it's successful, you've got to have 10 grand for the next order, 15 grand for the next order. And so that precludes you taking an income. Because if you take an income, then you're not actually growing the product where you're going to get to that rich stage because you have $20 million a year in sales. And you look at a 20% margin, and that's some real money. So you've got to not have a lot of debt. You've got to build up some savings, and you've got to have enough volume in your hustle that when you launch that private label product, you still have your income, like your day job income now, and you're able to buy new product. So you might have to keep the hustle part going, right? You keep that hustle part going, and that's what you live on. And then you take $0 out of the private label product if it is successful. And here's the crazy part. The more successful the private label product is, the more important it is you take nothing home because you really want to grow it as fast as possible. If it's like kind of successful, I know lots of sellers who do something really cool. So they actually have lots of small private label products. So they have several things that sell 200 units a month and they make 10 bucks a unit, but they've got 40 of these products they've developed over time and they're always launching a new private label product. Okay, those guys, they take money out of it and take it home. But if you've got some one killer product that's really awesome, the goal is you take none of that home. So you got to be prepared that if this is your side hustle, and you're making enough now to live off of it, that you keep that going while you build your own stuff.
Yeah, that's good to know, because I think, if you don't have kind of like an end goal in mind, you can just kind of just keep going until you kind of find yourself going, okay, where am I really going with this, right? So I think it's good to kind of map these things out and plot these things out, right? But even though it was a question of me getting aspirational, I'm not I want to be clear to people that there's still work involved. So The work doesn't stop. So.
Right. And the great thing is, though, if you do develop some really nice products, it doesn't have to be a soul crushing job kind of hours thing. Like I know some private label guys who the average American would be thrilled with their annual income, thrilled. And they probably work 20, 25 hours a week, and they travel a whole lot, and they network a whole lot, and they have really, I mean, you talk aspirational. That's a pretty great life.
Yeah.
There are seasons where they work 60 hours for a week. There are seasons, there are certain parts of the year where they're really hitting it and they're working crazy hours, and then they'll work 10 hours a week for a month or two. So it can be really magazine life ideal. But it takes a while to win that lottery, and it doesn't happen overnight. That is years of investment of time and effort.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And yeah, definitely that magazine social media life. I mean, it's very appeasing, but it is possible too. But I think we've covered a lot of great steps. Just this last segment that I want to get into, I call it open floor. I don't know if you recall it from the first time, but basically it's a space where you can communicate anything that you want to the audience. So if there's anything that you want to share, the floor is all yours.
Fantastic, because I would love to try and sell a copy of my book. I mentioned earlier in the podcast that there are these scams and schemes out there where they want you to pay $5,000 or $10,000 to sell on Amazon. Well, if you're Amazon curious, don't do that because it's risky. Instead, you can spend 25 bucks, or I think it's like 13 bucks for the ebook. To buy my book, which is called The Amazon Incubator, Grow Your Business or Hatch a New One. And so the Amazon Incubator talks about a lot of the steps that Yusuf walked you through in this podcast of how to set your goals, how to set up your business, and how to make decisions about what products to sell, about how to ship your products, about how to grow over time, how to run ad campaigns. It's all the basics of selling on Amazon in one place. And can really help you decide, is this something you want to do and how do you want to do it? So if you go to www.theamazonincubator.com, and it's got the theamazonincubator.com, you'll see links where you can buy the books. It's at all major bookstores, which is super exciting for me. And please go check it out. And if you're not sure, you can go to that website and get a free preview of chapter two. And read that and see if you think it's worth buying the book.
Okay, perfect. And yeah, I'll also include the link in the description for this episode so people will be able to see it and to check it out. But you know, I think I'm going to pick up a copy and give it a read. I think there's going to be some good gems in there. So yeah, it'd definitely be great for, you know, for people to go support the book, check it out. You know, I think if you got value from this episode, then I could imagine you'll get even more value from actually reading the book. But yeah, no, that's good. Congratulations on your book.
Well, thanks so much, Yusuf. I'm super excited. I appreciate the support. And really, y'all, I don't sell a course. I don't sell how to sell on Amazon. I'm a consultant for totally different things on Amazon. So just letting y'all know, this isn't some entree to try and get you to buy a $5,000 course. I honestly want to help people like me who want the side hustle, who want to be an entrepreneur for the first time to check it out. And I'm a big believer that I think Amazon has probably launched more millionaire businesses than any other platform in the history of the world. It's such a great opportunity. So please check it out, and I appreciate the consideration.
Okay, perfect. And you know, in terms of, you know, people being able to get connected with you, like where can they find you on social media, or is there any way that they can contact you?
Absolutely. So you can find me on social media under my name, Leslie, Leslie Hensel, Hensell. I'm on all the major platforms. You can find me on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on Instagram. on X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it. And please reach out. If you have questions about selling on Amazon, you want an opinion on something, you need help, I love to talk to small business people. That is the fuel that gets me through my day. So please connect. And if you follow me, I give a lot of information and suggestions and strategies and ideas for Amazon and other e-commerce platforms every day.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. And again, all that stuff will be in the description for this episode. But, you know, Leslie, it was great having you on. I think you did a really great job today as the second mic. So appreciate having you.
Thanks so much, Yusuf. It was fun.
Perfect.